Welcome to part two of the AAT P11D podcast. Part one looked at preparation and submission, but this one looks at the calculation of expense payments and benefits to be reported on the P11D. The general rule is the cash equivalent or value is the cost to the employer or to any other third-party provider, and there are then some exceptions to the general rules based on specific legislation, covering live-in accommodation, vouchers, car and fuel benefit charges, and company vans. The P11D entry should include details of any amounts made good to the employee, or from which income tax was deducted under PAYE, and the taxable benefit is then the net cash equivalent. The timescale for making good should be reasonably short. HMRC guidance on making good car fuel in its employment income manual says the following. In many instances, the making good required is completed by the end of the tax year, but you will find cases where making good does not occur until after the end of the tax year. This may be where mileage records and repayments in the final months of the year take a little time to process. You can accept this as meeting the terms of the legislation, provided final settlement is made without unreasonable delay. I think it's important to bear that in mind in terms of when we're claiming that benefits are not chargeable because amounts have been made good. The expense payment or benefit to be reported on a P11D must include the full amount of any VAT, and this is irrespective of any amount that may be recovered in whole or in part. It's also important to remember that P11Ds have to be reported on a tax year basis, not based on the company accounts year end. So let's now have a look at the different items to be reported on the P11D. Assets transferred. You have to report the market value of any company asset transferred at the date of the transfer of the asset to the director or employee. This general rule applies if the asset sold or transferred was a car or any other asset that had never been used to provide a benefit. It could be a second-hand desk or a filing cabinet. However, if the company asset was previously provided as a benefit in kind, there are special rules, and the cash equivalent is then the higher of the market value of the asset at the date of transfer, or the market value of the asset when it was first provided as a benefit. And you could deduct from that any sums already taxed as a benefit on the use of the asset. We have to differentiate between goods that are purchased by the employer, where the cost rule would apply, and any goods that are produced in-house by the employer. The marginal cost of production, normally the wholesale price, would be used as the reportable benefit of goods manufactured by the employer, thus excluding any profit element which would otherwise be reflected in a substantially higher retail price. Any awards of readily convertible assets are not reportable on a form P11D. They attract PAYE in Class 1 NICs and should be dealt with separately. Section B of the P11D, payments made on behalf of the employee. Here we have to report details of any payments made by the employer on behalf of the employee. For example, the settlement of the employee's credit card bill, a home telephone bill, or any school fees. Also included here will be the amount of any tax deductible on notional payments not immediately borne by the director or employee, and the special rules about making good within 90 days of the receipt of each notional payment. This can often relate to foreign stock, such as US stock, and it's important that the employer is aware of these and that the correct treatment is applied. PAYE should have been applied to the employment income provided in the form of a cash voucher or readily convertible asset, or vouchers and credit tokens used to acquire such assets if they are readily convertible assets themselves. Section C is vouchers and credit cards, where we have to report any expense incurred in the provision of vouchers, including season tickets, capable of being exchanged for money, goods or services, and any additional expenses incurred in providing the benefit. We should provide details of all expenses and other payments made, but not those in connection with cars, which is covered by Section F, using credit cards or tokens, excluding amounts reported elsewhere, such as entertaining, travel subsistence, etc. We have to include the value of any vouchers on which pay-as-you-earn has been operated, perhaps luncheon vouchers, where the excess over the 15p per day exempt amount is put through the payroll. Remember also that vouchers are liable to Class 1 National Insurance contributions unless they're exempt, and that it should have been paid by the 19th of April 2008. A otherwise an interest charge arises. You do not have to report the first £55 per week of any qualifying childcare vouchers provided by the employer, but if the employer gives more than £55 a week, the excess, and only the excess, should be reported here. Next is Section D, Living Accommodation, and there's Working Sheet Number 1 that's provided by HMRC to help the calculations here. The provision of living accommodation is a taxable benefit for any employee, not just P11D employees, so that's regardless of the level of earnings and has to be reported on Form P9D as well as the P11D. So the P11D working sheet can be used to calculate the cash equivalent. The basic charge is based on the greater of the annual or gross rateable value of the property or the rent paid by the employer, less any rent that might be paid by the employee. The benefit is prorated if the accommodation is only available for part of the year. We then have an additional charge called the yearly rent, which arises on property costing more than £75,000, including the cost of any improvements which are measured from the next tax year after the expenditure was incurred. Where the employer has owned or had an interest in a property for 6 years prior to the employee taking occupancy, you have to substitute market value for cost. And market value is defined as the price which the property might reasonably be expected to obtain on a sale in the open market with vacant possession. The value of any exempt job-related accommodation, such as a house or a flat occupied by a caretaker of a school or other premises, may be excluded from P11B reporting, where A, it is necessary for the proper performance of the employee's duties that he or she should reside in the accommodation, B, the property is provided for the better performance of the duties and it is customary for employers to provide accommodation, or C, there is a special threat to the employee's security and special security arrangements are in force. You rarely see the security option, the first one, A, for employees' duties where it's necessary for the proper performance, common exemption there. The second one, where it's supposed to be customary for employees to provide accommodation, that's one that's often looked at and challenged by the revenue. Importantly, in terms of accommodation benefit, you have to remember to report other taxable benefits connected to the exempt accommodation. For example, the cost of light and heat or repairs and decoration costs if they're met by the employer. Where the occupation of the property is exempt, the payment of council tax and water rates is not a taxable or reportable benefit. Another taxable benefit that's connected to the accommodation would be the provision of furniture and fittings, where the use of assets rules, 20% of the cost applies. This sometimes gets overlooked. The next section on the P11D is Section E, Mileage Allowance Payments and Passenger Payments. And again, we have Working Sheet Number 6, which is provided to help you with the calculations and reporting. We have to report the excess over and above the authorised mileage rates, 40p a mile for the first 10,000 business miles and 25p a mile thereafter. For mileage allowance payments, the approved amount is the number of business miles travelled multiplied by the appropriate rates for the kind of vehicle used. A question to ask your client here is there a system in place to check if any director or employee has exceeded, say, the 10,000 miles at 40p and continued to get 40p? On passenger payments, the approved amount is the number of business miles travelled by car or van for which a passenger is carried, and in respect of which passenger payments are made, then multiplied by 5p per mile per passenger. And passenger payments can be paid in respect of company vans or cars for which the employees charge a benefit in kind as well as on their own vehicles. Next section, Section F, Cars and Car Fuel Benefits. Here we have Working Sheet 2 to help you report the benefit if you need it. Chapters 11, 12, 13, 15 and Appendix 1 of the booklet 480, Expenses and Benefits, a Tax Guide, provide HMRC's guidance on car and fuel benefit. Chapter 11 relates to company cars for the period from 6th of April 2003 and to company vans from 6th of April 2005 when those rules changed. The definition of a car is any mechanically propelled road vehicle except a goods vehicle, a motorcycle, an invalid carriage, or a vehicle of a type not commonly used as a private vehicle and unsuitable to be so used, for example, a Grand Prix car. I said the PLMD Working Sheet 2 is available to help calculate both the car and car fuel benefit. The PLMD itself only has room for reporting two company cars, which requires therefore a separate sheet for any additional cars made available due within the year. Employers have to report details of the cars made available for private use and the total car benefit charge. A car benefit charge is incurred whenever a car is made available, without any transfer of the property in it, to an employee, or indeed to a member of the employee's family or household, by reason of the employment, and it is available for private use. There would have to be substantial evidence to prove if a car is available that it's not available for private use, and this might involve very detailed business mileage logs. So where a car is made available for the private use of an employee, it is deemed to be made available by reason of the employment. In other words, it's said to be going with the job. One statutory exception to this where the employer is an individual and it can be shown that the car was provided in the course of ordinary domestic, family or personal relationships. HMRC would look to see if the car had been treated as a business asset and whether any claims were made in relation to the car, in which case they wouldn't accept the statutory exception. In terms of calculating the car benefit charge, the revenue guidance on this sets it out in a series of numbered steps. Step 1, find the price of the car. Step 2, add the price of any accessories which fall to be taken into account. And step 3, make any required deductions for capital contributions by the employee. And step 4, take the lower of the amount carried forward from step 3 and £80,000. The £80,000 is the maximum list price of any car. £150,000 Rolls-Royce or Bentley would be limited to £80,000 in terms of calculating the car benefit. We then have to find the appropriate percentage for the car and multiply that figure by the list price of the car. Make any required deduction for periods when the car was unavailable and make any required deduction for payments by the employee for the private use of the car. So let's have a look at some of this. This method of calculation is modified in the case of cars that run on road fuel gas and for classic cars, and the benefit may be reduced where the car is shared. The price of a car means its list price if it has one, or its notional price if it has no list price. The list price is what we will mainly deal with, and it is the inclusive price published by the manufacturer, importer, or distributor of the car if sold singly in a retail sale in the open market in the UK on the day before the date of the car's first registration. So you can't take into account any discounts. It includes standard accessories, any relevant taxes, VAT, car tax, any customs or excise duty, any tax chargeable as if it were a customs duty, and delivery charges, but it excludes the £25 new car registration fee because that's an administration fee, not a tax. Paragraph 12.4 of the booklet 480 makes clear that the list price is not the dealer's advertised price or the price paid, which, as I've said, may include discounts or cashback. Cars manufactured to run on road fuel gas, the price of the car is reduced by so much of that price as it is reasonable to attribute to the car being manufactured in such a way. For cars registered on or after 1st of January 1998, the appropriate percentage depends on the carbon dioxide, the CO2 emissions of the car, and the type of fuel used. And within the booklet 480, we have a table which tells us, for example, petrol is P, diesel not Euro 4 is D, diesel Euro 4, which was only relevant up until December 2006, was L. Electric cars are E, hybrid cars H, gas cars B, and so on. For cars not available at some time during the year, there'll be no adjustment to the benefit unless the period when the car was unavailable totaled at least 30 consecutive days. And again, records would need to be maintained to prove this. We have to report the list price of the car and optional accessories fitted to the car when first made available. Accessories added after the car was first made available are to be included unless the cost was less than £100. But you can't get around this £100 issue by splitting up the accessories for having, shall we say, £480 steel wheels or what have you. You can exclude the price of accessories necessarily provided for use in the employment, such as a tow bar for towing a display trailer, and any design solely for use by a disabled person or to cater for a particular disability of an orange badge holder. Capital contributions up to £5,000 made by the employee towards the cost of the car or indeed any accessories can be deducted from the list price, and any amounts paid in the year by the employee for the private use of the car should be reported in separate boxes. But be warned, payments must be specifically for private use of the vehicle, and that should be documented. It has to exclude payments for supplies or services, such as payments for petrol or insurance. The cash equivalent of each car must be reported. Then the total cash equivalent for all cars available in 2007-08 will be shown in box 9 on the P11D. Classic cars which are defined as more than 15 years old on the 5th of April with a market value of more than £15,000, that is more than its original price, have separate rules. The price of the classic car is the market value of the car on the last day in the year that the car was available to the employee. In arriving at the company car percentage for the CO2s, you'll find a table in the back of the booklet 480, and this gives us the CO2 factors, the relevant percentage. So if it's a car with 160 grams per kilometre, then for 2007-08 the percentage is 19%. The minimum is 15%, subject to adjustments for hybrid cars. The maximum is 35%. There is no adjustment at all. Diesel cars generally have a 3% supplement added to them. Let's now look at the provision of car fuel for private motoring, which again is perhaps one of the more difficult ones and one that can be challenged by HMRC when they come a-calling. The cash equivalent of fuel for each car fuel benefit charge should be shown, and then the total cash equivalent of fuel for all cars available in 2007-08 should be reported in box 10 of the P11D. A car fuel benefit charge will apply unless fuel or any mileage allowance was provided solely for business travel, or unless the director or employee was required to make good the whole cost of any private motoring and actually did so. Making good can be a payment to cover the cost of any private fuel or by replacing the fuel used for private motoring. But again, be warned, HMRC will check the method used. The provision of fuel or any part of a mileage allowance to cover home-to-work travel will give rise to a car fuel benefit charge. The next section is Section G, Company Vans, and again there's a working sheet number 3, which is available to help make the calculation. Employers are required to report the cash equivalent of all vans made available for unrestricted private use. The report goes on box 9 for the use of the van, and there's the new box 10 for any private fuel that is reported. A van is defined as a mechanically propelled road vehicle, which is of a construction primarily suited for the conveyance of goods or burden of any description, and of a design weight not exceeding 3,500 kilograms or 3.5 metric tons. The working sheet tells us that if the van is used mainly for business travel and the only other use is for ordinary commuting, there is no benefit charge and you need not complete this form. Other private use can be ignored if it's insignificant, and HMRC examples of insignificant private use are an employee taking an old mattress or other rubbish to the tip once or twice a year, an employee making a slight detour to stop at a newsagent on the way to work, or an employee calling at the dentist on the way home. HMRC examples of use that is not insignificant include an employee using the van to do the supermarket shopping each week, an employee taking the van away on a week's holiday, or an employee using the van outside of work for social activities, perhaps, I suppose, going to the football or the races or what have you. Where a taxable benefit does arise, the cash equivalent is a standard charge of £500. And please remember that for this year, 2007-08, there is no longer a reduction to £350 for a company van that's over 4 years old. That's dropped, so this year, if the van is chargeable, it's £500 for 2007-08. Where a taxable benefit does arise, the cash equivalent is a standard charge of £3,000. The use of company assets rules will apply to larger vans. The full charge applies if the van is used as a benefit throughout the year. The benefit is apportioned if the employee commenced or ceased to use the van privately during the year, and it can be reduced, as with company cars, if the van was unavailable for 30 consecutive days or more. The benefit for any shared vans is apportioned between the users in proportion to their use. So if you have a team of two that use a company van and they share it equally, then they would pay half the benefit charge each. Section H is interest-free and low-interest loans, and indeed other benefits. For interest-free loans, we have a working sheet number 4. The provision of an interest-free loan or a low-interest loan to an employee or member of the family or household by virtue of the employment is a taxable and reportable benefit. A loan is a beneficial loan for the purposes of PLMD reporting when it's arranged or facilitated by the employer or a third party on behalf of the employer, and the rate of interest is less than the official rate of interest. The official rate of interest is 6.25%. You do not have to report on the PLM details of loans used wholly for a qualifying purpose. And for guidance on this, have a look at Chapter 17 and Appendix 5 of the booklet 480. Employers are required to report the cash equivalent for each non-qualifying loan separately, except where a close company elects to treat all non-qualifying loans in the same currency and own at the same time as one loan. If the total amount outstanding on all non-qualifying loans does not exceed £5,000 at any time in the year, such loans can be disregarded. There may be tax relief available for a beneficial bridging loan, but only if the qualifying relocation package is less than £8,000. In this section, the employer is required to report the purpose of the loan, and we have a list: A, loan used for the purpose of a trade, profession or vocation; B, loans used for the purchase of a main residence; C, loans for a purpose eligible for relief other than the purchase of a main residence. Then we have D, which is a loan not within A, B or C above; E, a loan given as part of a relocation package; and F, where the purpose of the loan isn't known. Next section on the P11D is Section I, Private Medical Treatment or Insurance. And the provision of private medical treatment or insurance, except medical insurance cover for overseas duties, is a taxable and reportable benefit on all PLMD employees, but it is not a taxable benefit for any P9D employees. Employers have to report the cost of any private medical or dental treatment or insurance premiums and the cost of any excess on the medical insurance cover if that cost is met by the employer. Any amount made good should be deducted and the net cash equivalent will be reported on the P11D. Premiums may be renewed at different times in the tax year depending on when the cover was first taken out, but there's no need to pro-rata the cost, providing a consistent approach is adopted. The cost of medical screening that is generally available to all employees is still currently treated as a non-taxable benefit, although that's being looked at the moment by HMRC, but they've confirmed that benefit that wasn't taxable in previous years won't be taxable for 2007-08. Next section on the P11D to consider is Section J, Qualifying Relocation Expenditure. And again, we have PLMD Working Sheet number 5 provided to calculate the cash equivalent of relocation expense payments and benefits. The cost of relocating an employee has to be reported here in terms of qualifying expenditure and at Section N of the P11D in terms of any non-qualifying expenditure. Employers have to report for each move the excess over the £8,000 tax relief limit of qualifying relocation expenses, payments and benefits. The report is made in box 15 on the P11B. The cost of relocating an employee is reported here for qualifying expenditure and at Section N of the P11D for non-qualifying expenditure. Employers have to report for each move the excess over the £8,000 tax relief limit of qualifying relocation expenses, payments and benefits, and the report is made at Box 15 of the P11D. A relocation will qualify for tax relief if the employee moves within the employment, say on promotion, or to take up a new employment, and providing that the new residence is within reasonable daily travelling distance of the new workplace. Qualifying expenditure includes the cost of selling the old home and buying the new one, including legal expenses, stamp duty, estate agent fees, removal fees, and the cost of travel between the old home and the new workplace until a new permanent home is found. It would also include the cost of temporary accommodation at the new location whilst the employee looks for more permanent accommodation. The £8,000 tax relief is not an annual limit, and you must therefore establish the cost of any qualifying items included last year and take this into account. There's a time limit of 12 months after the end of the tax year in which the relocation takes place, although HMRC will normally grant an extension if unforeseen circumstances delay the move. Next section on the P11D, Section K, services supplied, where we must report the cost of any services supplied to the employee, and you should take into account any amount paid by the employee or from which tax was deducted, and then arrive at the net cash equivalent to be reported at Box 15. The cost of any in-house services, such as tax advice provided to employees of an accountancy firm or conveyancing services provided to employees of a law firm, are not taxable. The charge, if any, would be based on the marginal or additional costs incurred. So the employee of a law firm would be expected to pay the actual cost of items such as search fees, otherwise that would be a reportable benefit. The next section on the P11D is Section L, assets placed at the employee's disposal. The reporting requirement is based on the annual value of the use of the employer asset, and that annual value is 20% of the market value of the asset when it was first used to provide a benefit, or any sum paid by the provider of the asset by way of a rent or hire charge. You have to report here by providing a description of the asset and then reporting the gross benefit comprising the annual value, including any additional expenses incurred in providing the asset. As I've said already, the rent or hire charge should be substituted if this is higher than the annual value. Some employer-provided assets are, however, exempt from a tax charge where the private use of the asset is regarded as insignificant in the context of its use by the employee in performing his or her duties. But it should be noted that this exemption excludes the use of vehicles, including boats and aeroplanes. It might well apply to a laptop provided to an employee who uses it for work but also takes it home. There's no taxable benefit if an employer provides equipment such as a wheelchair or hearing aid to an employee with a disability when it is provided to enable the employee to take up or retain their work and where the employee uses the equipment for significant private use. We next move on to Section M of the P11D, which is under heading of Other Items. Section M is the only dual choice section where you have to decide whether or not there's a Class 1A National Insurance Contributions liability and whether the item should be included in the brown box, which is for Class 1A, or whether to include it under the blue box entry. I've mentioned previously that the HMRC booklet CWG5 is useful, your Appendix 1, where you have a list of various benefits and you can look down there and it'll tell you where it should go in the P11D and whether it's a brown box or a blue box. Section M is effectively one of the catch-all sections of the P11D, sweeping up the entries that do not automatically fit elsewhere. It is impossible to give an exhaustive list, but the main items that you are likely to encounter we shall discuss, and we'll start with subscriptions and professional fees, where we are required to report the cost to the employer of any subscriptions paid by the employer as the cash equivalent of the benefit. If the subscriptions or fees are job-related, and if they're included in the HMRC published list 3, they will not be taxable and they should be included in a P11D dispensation. If there isn't a dispensation, they will still need to be reported and the employee will then have to claim a deduction for the cost. However, where you have leisure club, golf or gym subscriptions, these will be taxable and should be reported here. Other items require a description, the gross cost, the amount made good, and the net cash equivalent. The provision of a nursery at the workplace or a premises financed and run by the employer may be totally exempt. In other circumstances, the cost met by the employer will be taxable and should be reported year, apportioned as necessary between the directors and employees enjoying the benefit. Any amount made good by the directors and employees should be deducted from the cost in the normal way to arrive at the net cash equivalent. You may also have to report educational assistance where the cash equivalent would be the value of any scholarship awarded by reason of the parent's employment. Also, you could report here the cost of any school fees or other educational assistance relating to a director or employee. If the contract was between the employer and the school, the entry should be in the brown box, but if the employer is merely paying on behalf of the director or employee, it's the blue box entry. We come back to the Class 1 NIC problem. There should be no taxable or reportable benefit in respect of genuine job-related training, excluding recreational training provided by the employer or a third party. Also within year, non-qualifying relocation benefits would be reported on the basis of the cost to the employer or any third party. We also have to report here any loans written off or waived, reporting the amount of the loan written off or waived unless it was written off by virtue of the death of the employee. Income tax paid but not deducted from director's remuneration should be reported here. So any amount of income tax paid to HMRC in 2007-08 that the employer failed to deduct from remuneration paid to a director, irrespective of the year in which the remuneration was paid. You can ignore income tax on notional payments, which go in Section B, and this box is normally about a charge to income tax borne by the company, such as when HMRC issues a Regulation 80 determination. The final section on the P11D is Section N, which covers expenses payments made to or on behalf of the employee. This section covers expense payments and highlights the need to report expenses made to and those paid on behalf of the employee. My view is that most employers should have or should be able to obtain a P11D dispensation to cover the majority of business expenditure included under this heading. Travel and subsistence payments not included in general expenses allowance have to be reported year if they're not covered by a dispensation. This will include any travel between home and a permanent workplace for UK employments and employments performed wholly outside the UK. Expenses to report will include fares, hotels, meals, etc. And HMRC's booklet 490, Employee Travel, a Tax and NIC Guide for Employers, will offer you some guidance on what expenses can be claimed. The next section within Section N is entertainment. And the first obligation is to identify whether or not the employing company is a trading organisation. This will normally confirm that the cost of business entertaining has been disallowed in the company accounts, and excluding reciprocal or social entertaining will enable the employee to obtain a personal tax deduction. HMRC officers will compare the tax computations with information reported on P11Ds and are likely to investigate any apparent discrepancies. Employees of non-trading organisations may be asked to prove that the expense was incurred wholly, exclusively and necessarily in the performance of their duties in order to avoid a tax charge. The P11D does not separately identify business and staff entertaining or working lunches at the permanent workplace, which are normally treated as a taxable benefit. Lunches provided as part of job-related training should not be treated as giving rise to a taxable benefit. Where employees have lunch when working away at a temporary workplace, the cost should be treated as allowable travel and subsistence. Staff entertaining is one of the most popular issues to give rise to a settlement with HMRC, although many employers now deal with this expenditure through a PAYE settlement agreement. The cost of food and drink taken out on any other normal places of work, including food for staff working late, meals and drinks when discussing business outside of the office, and food and drink at team meetings, will generally be taxable staff entertaining. This is one area where the problem is often one of identification, because inadequate records are kept to prove that the expenditure was on visitors who qualify for subsistence treatment or customers where the cost perhaps should have been disallowed and then not taxed as a benefit. There's provision here to report general expenses for business travel You have to report the amount of any round sum allowance, not exclusively for entertaining, reporting at box 16. And where they've been taxed with the payroll, the cash equivalent is reduced to nil. If the allowances can be shown to cover genuine business expenditure and that there's no profit element, the payer and tax office should be asked to issue a dispensation to cover the agreed amounts. Payments for use of home telephone, I want to consider next. We have to report any expenses incurred in connection with the provision of a telephone at the home of the director or employee. The payment of any part of the employee's personal rental costs will be taxable and liable to Class 1 NIC. The cost of identifiable business calls will be tax deductible. Here we'd want to consider whether there's a separate business line at the employee's home. And again, Appendix 1 of the CWG5 booklet gives you some guidance as to where to put it on the P11D and what the tax treatment should be. Incidental overnight expenses. Report the full cost of any personal incidental overnight expenses if any director or employee incurs expenditure in excess of the allowable limits. The allowable limits are £5 per night in the UK or £10 per night outside the UK. If the costs are kept within these limits, there is nothing to report. But if the limits are exceeded, the full cost must be reported, not just the excess. You can also include in this section of the P11D expenses incurred in or in connection with the provision for the director or employee of any benefits or facilities of whatsoever nature not returned at any previous heading. So, coming to the end of the P11D, I think it's a good idea now if, first of all, we review what I see as common errors to avoid, including, firstly, the failure to report expense payments where the employer assumes that the expense is allowable. That might be home to work travel. Failure to report benefits in kind, such as company cars and company car fuel benefit. And that might involve perhaps a pool car that doesn't qualify as a pool car and was available for private use, or providing fuel in such a way that the employee doesn't make good any private fuel or the full cost of any private fuel and a benefit arises. Failure to include VAT in the cash equivalent of the benefit, again, is a common error that I see. People forgetting that, particularly with staff entertaining costs or staff function costs, that you have to include the VAT element. And failure to include all costs related to the provision of the benefit. So again, with a staff function, including not just the cost of the meals, but the cost of the music, the cost of the taxi, fares to and from the venue, all costs that have to be included. List prices of company cars incorrectly reported will often crop up with an HMRC inspection because they'll check the list prices against perhaps Parker's Guide. And if they find that the second-hand price or the discounted price has been used, they will be looking for some money. Home-to-work mileage reimbursement, staff entertaining and working lunches, personal mobile and home telephone rental costs, top-ups for Oyster cards as well as top-ups for mobile phones, which are personal phones, often crop up. And then other personal expense costs, which haven't been reported or put through payroll. HMRC's website includes a heading of HMRC completion of P11D, some useful tips or some helpful tips. If I go through this for you, it says that the following tips should help you avoid making mistakes when you're completing your P11Ds for the 2007-08 tax year. We have pulled them together from the most common errors that people made when they completed their 2006-07 returns. We can deal with your returns faster if you avoid some of these common errors. Then HMRC lists the following errors. Make sure the entries on your return are clear and legible. Use a font size that is clear and readable. Show the employee's national insurance number, date of birth, and gender. An electric car, fuel type E, does not have CO2 emissions. The dates car available from box should only be completed when the car was first provided in that tax year. The date car available to box should only be completed when the car was withdrawn in that tax year. Do not enter 5th of April unless the car was withdrawn from the 5th of April. When completing interest-free and low-interest loans details, the dates loan was made box should only be completed when the loan was first provided in that tax year. When completing interest-free and low-interest loan details, dates loan was discharged box should only be completed when the loan was discharged in that tax year. Do not enter 5th of April unless the loan was discharged on the 5th of April. Next, I'd like to just quickly run through my P11D checklist. First of all, I want you to set a realistic timetable and start the preparation as early as possible, working back from the 6th of July deadline. I would suggest copies of the P11Ds or the P11D information to employees by, say, Monday the 23rd of June 2008. Allow them a week to come back with any queries. Expect them to provide the queries by the Friday of that week. You then have 2 weeks left to submit the P11Ds accurately and on time. Contact anyone else from whom information will be required. Payroll Bureau for information on loans repaid or payments made for the private use of the company car. Fleet Manager for details of company car and fuel benefits, including any changes that have occurred since the 5th of April 2007. Company car drivers for their returns of business mileage to confirm there's no fuel benefit has been provided or to recover the cost of any private fuel. HR or personnel for details of anything that has to be reported on P11Ds, for example, relocation payments. Contact your software supplier for the latest P11D software. Order sufficient P11D forms if they are to be manually prepared, and make sure that you have some spare forms in case you need them at the last minute. Review last year's P11Ds to confirm what benefits or expense payments were reported previously, again ensuring consistency of treatment. Review and update, or if you do not already have one, set up your permanent P11D file to keep details of any P11D dispensation and any other useful information. You can add items to the permanent file during the year, notably such matters as agendas and itineraries for the annual Christmas party or the summer ball or the director's sales conference. Identify any expense payments or benefits in kind that do not have to be reported because they're covered by a P11D dispensation, where we might expect to see business travel, subsistence, accommodation, entertaining, telephone calls and professional subscriptions. An HMRC guidance note such as the advisory mileage rates for company cars or the reimbursement of business mileage for employees using their own cars, where reimbursement is within the unified rates. This list should also include tax exemptions, for example, long service awards, late night taxis, small gifts, annual staff functions, staff canteens and light refreshments, incidental overnight expenses, £5 per night in the UK, £10 overseas. The PAY settlement agreement for minor, irregular and impractical payments. A tax reward scheme for incentive schemes. Finally, in summary, I would say P11D reporting is difficult and can be very time consuming. And of course, any failure to complete this exercise accurately and on time could prove costly in terms of interest and penalties, as well as the employer perhaps picking up the tax bill on a grossed up basis. The additional work in producing many more P11Ds than are necessary has a knock-on effect on directors and employees and should be avoided. Preparing properly, starting early, and informing employees and directors of the expense payments and benefits that are reportable, obtaining P11D dispensations to minimise the reporting to only taxable items, will all help to reduce the errors and the adverse effect on the people that make the money for the employing company. I hope you found this P11D podcast helpful. Thank you for listening.